Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On with us today, we have Andrew Howard, who is the CTO of Kadowski Security. And Kadowski is, he's responsible for Kadowski's IoT innovation market worldwide. And also, Andrew used to be worked at Georgia Technical Research Institute, the nationally recognized defense research organization. Andrew, welcome today. Thanks for joining.
Great. Good to be here.
Well, we are definitely glad to hear from you. And today, as we talked about before the show, and we're looking at giving an explanation to our listeners about cyber physical systems. If you've never heard about cyber physical systems before, or have and are curious, today's show is something you won't want to miss. But Andrew, first of all, give us your background. How did you get to where you're at? What was your life about? And just how did your career progress?
Sure. I'm a graduate of Georgia Tech here in Atlanta, engineering university, computer science trained. Worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers for several years, but ultimately ended up for the last 10 years working at the Georgia Tech Research Institute. This is an R&D organization that supports the U.S. national intelligence and defense community with research and development for things like sensors and radar systems, but also around cybersecurity. My job there for the last few years was to manage their and lead their cybersecurity R&D portfolio, about $120 million a year of work, particularly around cyber physical systems, which we're going to talk more about. But in the case of the military, that's connecting Humvees and weapon systems to networks and what the implications of that are. I recently transitioned to Kadowski Security as their chief technology officer. This is a Swiss-based engineering company that's expanding into the U.S. They're well known in the pay television business for content protection and are the market leader for protecting streaming content, whether it's to a set-top box through a provider, such as Dish Networks or Technicolor, but also in the over-the-top business such as Netflix. And so they protect content, and what drew me to this company is that they know how to build secure products and are very much in this cyber-physical space. And my job is to help them transition that expertise into the IoT market. And I'm excited to talk to you today about that market, what we're trying to do, and what are the risks to companies out there.
Okay. So, you know, the first thing that comes to mind, and I talk about cyber physical systems all the time, and I'm glad to have another person on so it's not just me kind of iterating these needs in this area, but what the heck does cyber physical systems mean? Give us that high-level definition of, if we heard this and heard somebody talking about it, what the heck are we talking about?
So you're going to hear the term cyber-physical system used interchangeably with another term called industrial control system. And to me, what that term means is taking a physical system that has existed for a long time or a short amount of time, but a physical system, like I think a good consumer example would be a refrigerator, or a toothbrush, or a toaster, or more a complex system like a car, or a manufacturing system. These systems in the past would stand alone and do what they do, whether that's, you know, make toast or produce paper if it's a manufacturing system, or drive humans if it's a car. And they're being plugged into the internet for a variety of reasons. And once they're plugged into the internet, they become a cyber physical system. Because now you have a physical system that communicates with the internet or a network, either for communication, direction, to pass information, for status, to bring content down to users. But the main summary is that a cyber physical system is a is a system that does some physical action that is now connected to the internet.
Okay. And we hear more and more and that, you know, this is a problem. So, but why is this such a problem? Why is securing these things coming front and center lately here?
So let's talk about a simple consumer example, and then we'll transition to more complex examples. Let's talk about a refrigerator. So if you're a refrigerator manufacturer, these systems over time have gotten more and more complicated. They produce ice in more complex fashions. They control temperature to a much finer degree, a much more granular degree. They're bigger. They have more processing power. And if you're a refrigerator manufacturer, you're an expert at building refrigerators. And yes, there are threats to a standalone refrigerator from a security perspective, but they're all pretty minimal. And most refrigerating companies that build these types of devices do not have security expertise. They don't need it. To attack a refrigerator, you would need to be physically in front of it to do something. And frankly, once someone's inside my house, I have bigger things to worry about than my refrigerator. However, now those refrigerators are connected to the internet or to a network. And now that refrigerator has inherited every internet risk, every internet threat that exists. It now can attack that refrigerator, and it can be used for a lot of malicious things. And so now I have a refrigeration company that is good at building refrigerators, but is not good at internet security, responsible for internet security.
Okay, let me stop you real quick there. We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to the CTO of Kadowski Security, Andrew Howard, and he was giving us an explanation of cyber physical systems, the need for securing on a simple, less complicated device. And we're kind of finishing up with that, and then we're going to go into a more complex example. Andrew, go ahead and finish up with what you're talking about there.
So now that I have an internet-connected refrigerator, I now have a refrigeration company that has to worry about building world-class refrigerators, but also securing them from internet threats. And what complicates that problem for them even more is that it's not like they built a brand new refrigerator that was designed for internet connectivity, where they built it from the ground up for security. In almost all cases, they're typically taking older equipment or older models, pre-internet connectivity, and just connecting them to the internet with no thought about security. So this is a very complex problem for the average manufacturer to deal with, because they have no in-house talent, they have no in-house technology, and the original device was never built with security in mind. Now let's transition that to a more complex example that has more implications, and that's in places like automobiles, for example. So now I take an automobile that, very much like the refrigerator, was not connected to the internet in the past, and the security threats from an internet security perspective, or just a flat-out cybersecurity perspective, were really not much to worry about. If someone wanted to hack a car, they literally had to get inside the car. This was shown in internet videos in the early 2000s. There were some scary attacks. But what gave me comfort as a driver was that those attacks required an individual to get inside the car. And that kind of attack just doesn't scale. There's no way attackers are going to go physically get inside enough cars for that to be a real threat. Mm-hmm. But much like the refrigerator, those car manufacturers are now connecting those cars to the internet to provide all kinds of neat features to me as a driver. I can download movie and music content. I can have a Wi-Fi hotspot inside my car. They can track my car's location, all kinds of neat features. But now I've taken a car that was never designed to be connected to the internet, that was built by a team of people who have no idea what they're doing about internet security, and I'm flat out just connecting it to the internet. And what scares me is that they can attack, now that all these cars are connected to the internet, any attack is likely to attack many vehicles, not just one. So the threat scale at huge numbers.
Okay.
And then probably at the most, I'll stop there and answer your question.
Yeah, I'll just say, now tell us seriously, you know, we can see that in a car, driving, somebody could take over, come in, hack it, drive it off the road. We've seen that example with Jeep. But we're kind of nervous about that example. But do we really care about the refrigerator and our household appliances? I mean, what's the big deal there?
We do, and it may not be obvious to the average consumer, but I would say there's two major threats that the consumer should be worried about. One is that device, whatever it is, could be compromised, and your personal information about you could be sent or captured and used against you or used for some financial scheme. Everything from, for example, a simple device might be a camera in your house. I'm sure most people would prefer not to have a camera inside their house broadcast all over the internet. Or a device that captures information about your health or your finances or your personal preferences. My guess is most consumers don't want that information available to the general public or other attackers. And if you look at devices like the recent Amazon Echo or the Google Voice device or even Apple Siri, I mean, do you really want everything you tell those devices potentially used by an attacker? Do you really, there's threats of those devices being used to record sensitive conversations. There's legal implications. So I would say the first concern to the consumer is, what devices in my house could be used against me if used maliciously by an attacker? So the refrigerator might not be the best example, but frankly, a lot of new refrigerators these days have cameras on them and recording devices that could do malicious things.
Interesting. Okay.
And then
so if we're looking at the inside our house, it's more of a, what are our trends? What are we doing? And maybe not just a refrigerator, but we have 10 of these devices all over our house. Now people have some trends. They know about us. They know what our activities are. So that's what we're saying there about the connectivity of all these little devices that make comfort in our lives.
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think it's trends for marketing purposes. And then the second piece would be private information, such as private video or private conversation being taken and used against you.
Okay.
In the first example, I worry about the day that I'm doing laundry and my house knows I'm doing laundry because there's an IoT device or there's some kind of device in the house that realizes I'm doing laundry, and then all of a sudden a commercial for laundry detergent comes up. I mean, those are the kind of things that I think are inevitable, given the amount of devices in our homes that are capturing data. And the fact that a marketing firm might use it is scary, but it's but livable probably. But what is not okay is a third-party attacker or a malicious user using that data.
Yeah, and I think we have two different things here when we're talking about the more complex one in the car, which that really kind of scares me because, I mean, literally 10, 15 years ago, I knew somebody that was a good a designer that made designs for the brake system and the throttle control system in cars. And he told me, he's like, I won't drive the cars I work on because I know certain things about them. And basically his take was that the computer's now in control of the whole car. You push the brakes, it's not really braking. You push an input to the computer. You push the gas, it's not really pushing the gas. It's controlling an input to the computer. And then the computer controls all that stuff. But now if we plug that in to a network, we have possible for someone from the outside to get in the middle of those controls.
Well, I think the car is an excellent example of this problem. And if you're okay diving in maybe one layer deeper.
Yeah, let's do that.
This is a good example of how taking devices built by teams that have no idea what they're doing from a security perspective can have really disastrous consequences. So the car uses a communication mechanism between the brakes and the steering wheel and the engine. Those pieces of the car pass messages back and forth. So as an example, whenever you hit the brake, a message is sent from the brake through the computer to the braking system that tells it to apply the calipers and slow down the wheels. That is done on a messaging system that was developed by manufacturers called the CAN bus, and I'll save the gory detail about how it works, but it was built for efficiency and availability by the car manufacturers, no security mechanisms in mind. And when the car isn't connected to the internet, that's no big deal. But now that I'm connected to the internet, the fact that that CAN bus or that messaging system has no security built in, for example, you can send messages down that bus unauthenticated, meaning that someone could send a brake message down the bus to the brakes that didn't come from the brakes through the network, is pretty scary, because I could be driving 80 miles an hour down the highway and someone could apply the brakes full speed or turn the wheel 270 degrees or put the car in reverse just because they want to, and the internal systems of the car would allow that to happen.
Yeah, that is definitely a scary thing. So if we go and look at what it is that somebody needs to do to implement a cyber physical control in these systems, what types of things would they be doing? Would these companies be doing?
So in some ways, the easiest thing to do on these devices is start over and build the devices from the ground up with security in mind. And as a security engineer, that's easy for me to say. If I were to go talk to the average company, the thought of doing that is probably not in the cards. So in an ideal world, we build these devices from the ground up with security in mind. That is certainly the right way to do things. I think budgets and the lack of security talent keep that from happening. So what you're really looking at is, how do I take existing systems and secure them? And the advice that we give our clients is several fold. First, you need to have a real assessment of these devices done by trained people. And that's probably more than just a penetration test. You can't just go hire a red team or hackers to look at it. You need to bring in a firm or a third party that really understands product and physical security to look at these devices. And then second of all, you at least need to do some basic hygiene on these devices, cybersecurity hygiene, that is, and take into consideration the fact that these devices are on the internet. Such things as, don't have default usernames and passwords. Make sure that only the services you need to run are running. Make sure that it only accepts authenticated messages. I could go on and on and on, but there's some easy checklist things that these firms can be doing that, I hate to use the word mitigate, but dampen the risks that are associated with connecting things to the internet.
Okay, well, let's take a break real quick. We'll be back after these messages from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
All right, welcome back. Today we are talking to Andrew Howard, again, the CTO of Kadowski Security. And we were getting into some interesting conversation about, cars and cars now becoming networked and connecting to the internet, and what types of things are required to make them safer from a virtual standpoint. So welcome back, Andrew. Let me understand this. When we're talking about these existing systems that are already in cars, and that you said we should throw them out and start designing from the ground up, are they really that bad that, if we haven't thought about security, we can just say, let's just separate something. Let's add security on top. Why can't we just do that?
So this is not really a new field. I think many people think that cyber physical systems or IoT security is a new field, a new concept. It's really not. What has made this very exciting, what has brought a lot of interest to this topic, is the fact that there are a lot more devices now, a lot more physical systems connected to the internet than there ever were. So this is coming to light. My point of saying that is that fundamental cybersecurity practices still apply to these devices, even though it feels a little bit like a new topic. Mm-hmm. And one fundamental cybersecurity principle is you cannot bolt on security. You cannot take something that is very insecure and then try at the last second to bolt security on top. This is a tried and true principle that over time has been proven many times. And the reason for that is that if you try and bolt it on top at the last second, a couple of things are likely to happen. One, you're likely to make the device unusable because the security that you're bolting on top, to do it right, you're in all likelihood messing with functionality or making the device less consumable by a consumer. And then secondly, if you're bolting it on top, you're likely to miss some threat scenario or some vulnerability during that bolt-on process, and you're not going to solve all the security problems.
Mm-hmm.
Bolting on security somewhat implies that I'm just going to put a force field or something around the device to keep it secure. And that's just not how it works, and that's just not likely to be successful. The right way to do things is to build a multi-layered defense-in-depth approach where you've really put some thought into what are the security concerns and how are we going to mitigate them, and what are the backups that we're going to use if our initial mitigations don't work. And therefore, starting over and really building the device from the ground up with security in mind is the right solution. But in the meantime, we got to find some middle ground that allows the devices to exist and be usable without rebuilding them.
Yeah, and I ask those questions because I run into the same thing, and I'm always like, why do we hear this? You know, but literally, those designs that have been around for years, they want to just be able to say, we can add security into it. But there's so many things that weren't looked at back then that just have to be reevaluated, that it would be easier sometime from the ground up. So if we went from the ground up, if we said there's a new way to do this, do you think this requires a global approach? I mean, like when we're talking cars, they're on a network. There's several manufacturers, though. They're all going to do this differently. Is there something that we have to say from the top level, this has to be the same no matter what manufacturer does it? Does government, does legislation have to get involved with that?
That's a good question. And if you look at the market right now, you're starting to see some of that happen. So you're starting to see industry groups formed to build standards for these physical devices that are connected to the internet. So in some ways, there's some market correction going on by the manufacturers to build standards. The reality is that without real government regulation or at least involvement, putting pressure on the market, those industry groups are unlikely to be massively successful because the reality is that this security costs money. And when you're building devices, cost is an important piece of that equation. Until there are going to be manufacturers that decide that security is just not important without there being some external forces putting pressure on them to change that.
So it seems to me like as a consumer, and I hear this all the time, oh yeah, somebody's working on making this secure. But then when you start digging into it, the companies you say aren't being, if they're not being pushed by regulation, they're not doing it. What is it going to take to have just a wake up call? Does it have to be that all the certain type of vehicles get hijacked and people die? Is it going to be that extreme before this, you know, this word gets out that they have to do something?
You know, 5 years ago, that's a good question. 5 years ago, we in the community were talking about the need for a, you know, Titanic level event to kind of wake everyone up about the risks here. And in my opinion, that type of event has happened 50 times over the last 5 years, and we can't seem to get people to wake up to it. And it's not just about cyber physical systems, but just cybersecurity in general.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, the attack against the Office of Personnel Management a couple of years ago or last year, I mean, that is a really bad event. But yet, that didn't seem to really change anything in the regulatory or consumer markets. So I used to think that it would take a big event, but I'm starting to believe that it's going to just flat out take regulation to make it happen. Certainly, the major players in the market are moving in the right direction. Recently, the Federal Communications Commission went after a device manufacturer, D-Link, for building an insecure device. Those types of actions will create change in the market because now you've got companies worried about being sued. So I think it's coming. It's slow. Short of major government regulation, I think we're still going to be talking about this in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, and you know what? I remember having these same conversations 5 or 10 years ago, and at that point, there was the same thing. Oh, wow, we have all these disasters that happened. This will drive something. This will push us to push everybody to get concerned. But when we come down to it, I mean, we had the Ukraine attacks that recently, the tornado warning thing in Dallas. Those type of issues should, you know, really show people that we have a need to do something. But I think the question is, what do we do? So that's what I'll put to you is, if we have the catastrophic event saying we need to wake up and do something, give us a roadmap.
Well, the roadmap for these manufacturers is that this security concern and the security mitigation have to be embedded in, have to be a core piece of their culture and a core piece of their engineering process. I talked to a lot of product managers who build devices in the U.S., and 5 years ago, this topic wasn't even on their radar. They did not care. Now when I talk to them, they're starting to get questions from their boards, and they're starting to wake up to the problems a little bit. I mean, they at least understand there's a security concern. It doesn't mean they're going to do anything about it. And so if there's going to be a real change, a few things are going to have to happen. You know, one, the average device manufacturer is going to have to wake up to the problem. The average consumer is going to have to put a lot of pressure on the manufacturers they use for their personal devices as well as enterprise devices. And then finally, some core technology needs to come to the market and be more ubiquitous that these manufacturers can take advantage of. Because one major problem for the average device manufacturer is, even if they wanted to really take on security as a key aspect of their business, finding talent to do that is pretty tough. Because the number of cybersecurity relevant engineers in the U.S. is not as many as there are jobs. And so that puts them in a little bit of a tough position. It requires some outside-the-box thinking of, if I can't get the talent, how am I going to do this?
Mm-hmm. So if I'm somebody listening and I say, you know, I want to join into this, what type of training would I want to get to position myself to be the best, to be able to be in the middle of helping companies with this type of cyber physical systems?
If you're at a company and you're a chief information officer or you're a product manager or you're involved in product development, I think step number one is for every device manufacturer to hire a cybersecurity, cyber physical evangelist, someone who has expertise in this space, who's lived in this space and has dealt with real problems and has built secure devices, and can be an evangelist within the company for the types of methodologies, technologies, practices, and techniques that need to be used to build a secure device. Because frankly, without a really informed evangelist, the companies aren't going to take any big steps. Mm-hmm. And I say hire, so that's probably a big debate point. You know, should we train someone or should we hire them? And in my opinion is you should go hire somebody. Because the amount of time it takes to train someone and really get them up to speed is a long time. And so I think if you want to get there fast, you should bring in an expert, either a full-time hire or a consultant that's in for a significant period of time.
Okay. So now if I'm a college student, say, what should I study? What classes should I take? What areas would I be interested in to get myself into this market?
Well, if you look at the expertise that's required, it really falls into three major categories. The first is computer science. So you could be there's a software component of these devices. There is a heavy electrical engineering embedded computing component of this that is often overlooked and is frankly where most of the problems are. And then finally, there's a risk management and governance piece. And I think if I'm a college student, any three of those areas are spaces that are worth investing some of your time. If you can develop software and understand secure software practices or secure hardware practices, there's likely a job for you somewhere in the United States. And risk management is a big piece of this. Since these companies are not building these devices from scratch, they're having to make risk trade-off decisions. And being an informed manager or governance person is an important piece of the equation.
Okay. So kind of in wrapping up here and closing, talk about Kudowski, what you do, what you might need help with, any way, you know, any how you help your customers, things like that. Give us an understanding of where you're at and how we might be able to reach out to you.
Sure. So Kedelsky Security is a member of a European company called the Kedelsky Group. There is a group of companies underneath that group that are market leaders in spaces like content protection, physical access, cybersecurity. And we are interested in partnering with device manufacturers that are concerned about security. Beginning of this year, we announced something to the market called the Internet Security Center of Excellence. You can find out more information about that on our website, kudelskisecurity.com, K-U-D-E-L-S-K-I, security.com. And what the Internet Security Center of Excellence is a grouping of like-minded companies that are trying to improve IoT and cyber physical system security. And we're working with some major manufacturers to help them build their next generation device such that it's much more difficult to hack. And if you look at the type of companies we're partnered with, it's a full spectrum. Everything from consumer devices to enterprise devices to industrial control systems and SCADA equipment. And the value that Kedelsky Security brings to the market, as well as the companies we're partnered with, is a 25-year history of building devices that are designed from the ground up not to be hacked, to withstand great attacks and still be manageable and useful to the customer. We've got a long history of doing that. We have 400 million devices deployed in the field today that we've been managing for a long time. And we're looking to leverage that expertise to benefit the partners we work with. So I'd encourage companies to check out what we're doing around the Kedelsky Security Internet Security Center of Excellence. And we're looking for partners that are interested in making secure devices.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining today, Andrew. And we definitely have covered a lot of ground here, and hopefully the listeners got something from it. So thank you for joining today.
Appreciate the time. Thank you.
All right. Have a good day.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.